CliffCentral.com.
Wow, what a weekend of sport that was. Darkest final days. Is this the darkest it's ever going to be for the Bucks? Well, if these guys got us this far, I'm pretty sure they can take us even further. It was a good weekend elsewhere. I mean, tennis was incredible. Andy Murray is the greatest, the greatest, the greatest. Here's a little trivia question for you. Andy Murray becomes the second ginger world number one in tennis. Who was the first person since 1973, since the inception of ATP World Rankings? Who was the second ginger in the world number one? We'll reveal the answer at the end of the show. Yeah, you didn't see that coming, hey, did you? There was also great football involved. There was amazing golf. The European Tour came to an end. So much to get through today. It's so much to talk about. And, well, obviously people are quite upset about the whole Springbok thing. But also some people are saying maybe it's good. Maybe this is the rock bottom that we needed. And now things can go up. Well, unfortunately, things don't work like that in the real world because in this country, shit gets retained. It's simple as that. Accountability is, well, it's just a big word, really. Yeah, anyway, I'm not going to get too doom and gloom. This is only the intro. AK is back with the whole weekend wrap-up and a whole bunch of other sports that he wants to get into. Got Dennis Friedman from Australia, basically. Well, we're going to just ask him a couple of hard-hitting questions, like what are his journalists up to? What's this whole thing about mints and can our cricketers have mints or not? But more importantly, once we get past all the tabloid fluff, we can talk actual cricket because they've made 6 changes to their squad. We had Dennis on here a few weeks back and basically he was saying that the Aussies haven't got a chance. So bravo to Dennis for basically saying his guy's a cuck. And well, it's followed through like that. Dennis is our oracle and he's a great guy to talk cricket with all time, every time. India just absolutely hammered England, if you're listening live, that's just finished. But that was pretty, predictable. Because win the toss, bat first, wait for the pitch to crumble, watch the opposition crumble. That's about it, really. But let's not mess around anymore with the intro. Let's get into AK. He is here, and he is, as always, prepped and ready for another edition of his sports. Hang on a second, AK, I've got to get these dials up. Going to set the tone with a little bit of Mos Def. There we go. What's happening?
Yeah, man, things aren't looking so great for newly-appointed coach Gordon Eakeson as the Lions of the North saw their winless run in the league extend to 7 games as the Timbisa-based side slumped to a 1-0 defeat to Golden Arrows. Now, Danny Peary actually scored the only goal of the game as Arrows climbed up to 2nd on the PSL standings. Now, Highlands Park dropping down to 14th place on the PSL. Still with related manager news, now Real Madrid boss Zinedine Zidane insisted he has no doubt Cristiano Ronaldo will be the deserving winner of a 4th Ballon d'Or come January next year. Now Ronaldo returned to haunt Atleti 5 months 5 months after scoring the winning penalty at Real's second Champions League victory over their city rivals 3 seasons ago. Now in the final La Liga derby at Atletico's Vicente Calderon, Ronaldo deflected a free kick that opened the scoring before he doubled the lead from a penalty spot. Now he completed his 39th Real Madrid hat-trick with a simple finish from Gareth Bale's cross. Now victory extends Los Blancos' lead at the top of the La Liga to 4 points from Barca, who missed the Lionel Messi, who was ill. They actually drew their game 0-0 at home to a 9-man Malaga, and this all happened on Saturday. Now Madrid are beaten in 29 games in all competitions stretching back to April. So good news for Zinedine Zidane's men. Some golf news now. Matthew Fitzpatrick birdied the last hole to win the $8 million USD World Tour Championship yesterday as Stenson won the race to Dubai for the second time. Now England's Fitzpatrick completing a remarkable season in which he represented Europe, remember, in the Ryder Cup within 2 years of turning pro. Now he backed it up with winning the season's ending championship. Now the 22-year-old closed with a 67 for a 17 under par total at the Earth Course Golf Estate. cricket news, now senior Black Caps batsman Ross Taylor has vision problems and will definitely see an eye specialist before the second test against Pakistan. There's been concern about Taylor's lack of runs in recent tests, and he didn't bat in his usual number 4 spot in the second innings of the first test in Christchurch. Now New Zealand won that game by 8 wickets. 32-year-old averages about 45, but he's only averaged just over 10 in his last innings, scoring 11 in his only comeback against Mickey Arthur's men. Speaking of Mickey Arthur, Misbah Ul Haq has pulled out of the New Zealand tour to return home because of his father, who is actually critically ill. Now the obvious choice of Azhar Ali will take over as captain, and no immediate decision has been made about flying out a replacement for the second test, which starts in Hamilton this Friday. So I'm not too sure if he's still going to stick around, seeing that he's 42 and he's got well over 100 test games and he's got 2 degrees, so we don't know about that.
I'm still fascinated by the whole Ross Taylor and eye problem.
Yeah,
I suppose he's got to have an excuse for the way he's been playing the last 6 months.
he's been shocking, man. So lastly, now some football. Jurgen Klopp praised Liverpool's performance in the goalless draw against the Saints, even though the Reds missed about 15 chances and a chance to cement their pole position on the top of the Barclays. Now City drew level with Liverpool by winning 2-1 at Crystal Palace and only in second place on goal difference, while Chelsea topped the league now as Diego Costa scored just before halftime to see Chelsea beat Watford by 1-0. So that was your quick dish out on the Bounce Show.
All right, okay, thanks so much. Yeah, there was just a multitude of sports to get through, and we'll try to touch on throughout the hour. We got Dennis in about sort of 5-10 minutes, but what I want to do is obviously just touch on the whole Springbok thing.
Mm-hmm.
People are hugely irate on social media, as you would expect. And look, if you want to get involved in the chat, you want to throw some things up, just tweet me at FollowTheBounce. You're welcome to get involved in the show. I don't know how constructive it is, though, because let's be honest, what's going to happen? Elsker is going to come back. They're going to have a review meeting. They're going to say, well, you know, there's no point. This isn't a time for knee-jerk reactions. Alistair needs to be given time, blah, 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 blah. This is what it comes down to for me, is that it's this accepting mediocrity. I think it's been happening in SA sport now for a little bit too long. And I think people who write things to AfriForum and they start getting on about transformation, that's not the ticket here. Yeah. Trust me on this, it's not. I mean, people are going on about the fact that, yeah, but see, transformation is fucking up sport. And then you go, Protea is pretty handy right now. They've got the best transformation record. Let's not use scapegoats here, and transformation is a scapegoat. Obviously, you don't want to see a guy like Zondele Stick just being thrown into the Bok fold. This is a guy who was assistant coach of the EP Kings, and he was pretty cuck there. Suddenly, he's a Bok assistant coach. So, yes, there's isolated incidents right now where it's just poor management. It really is. But let's not throw this whole transformation thing under the bus. It's just short-sighted, and you're just looking to be eaten alive on Twitter. What I'm going to say right now is that Asikotsi isn't inspiring anything right now, and he's talking about players not being able to execute anything. This is what I find so infuriating. So if this isn't happening right, you change the team. I mean, I'm not saying become like France and basically just keep changing guys because you just get bored of selecting the same people. And we've seen their rugby going downhill. But if these guys can't do it consecutively, and Alistair Cook said after the match that the team likes the plan, everyone's doing really well in training, blah, 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 but they can't do the most basic of things. Just to give you an example, rugby's about scoring tries, right? About scoring points, and ultimately scoring more points than the opposition. So here is 2016, the list of... I just lost it. Man. All I want to do is credit the person who... I was just going to credit the person who tweeted this, and then as I did that, it fell away. Maybe I'll get back to that. Well, I'm sure it'll pop up again. So basically, out of 10 international rugby teams right now, the Springboks are 8th. So here we go. DJ Kev. DJ Kev King on Twitter. Thanks for the list. Basically, this is, I'll just run you through quickly. New Zealand topped 77 tries. They average 5.9 tries a match. England, 40 tries. Okay, so a bit of a gulf there between New Zealand and the rest of us, but we come to expect that. Ireland scored 33, average of 3 a test. Australia averaging 2.6 a test. So I'll just give you the averages. Wales averaging 2.4. France 2.2. Scotland 1.9. South Africa 1.7. South Africa averaging 1.7 tries. So let's just, I know there's a thousand other things to look into in SA Rugby, but that's got to, you've got to say that there's wrong people involved here. That's not execution. There's a fundamental problem in running with the ball, scoring tries, and then the defense goes. And then it's like, yeah, we've had three defensive coaches this year. Well, whose fault is that? Alistair Goodseer has to be accountable for this. And even though you don't want to see coaches coming in and out, If the guy's cock, he's cock. That's as simple as that. It's got nothing to do with emotions. There's nothing personal here. This simply isn't working. They've played 11 tests this year. They've lost 7 tests this year. That's 4. Let's talk about those 4, right? Beat Ireland in the Highveld after a 10-minute colossal comeback second half, okay? Wow, that's hardly a big win. Beat Argentina, Nelspruit, I think, at home. Also, massive comeback towards the end. Hardly a great win. Beat Ireland in the third test, Port Elizabeth. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Again, Ireland could have won it right at the death there. Who else we beat? Oh, we beat probably the most lackluster Australian team we've ever seen at the Highveld of Pretoria. So there's your 4 wins for the year, okay? Granted, other teams like England and the Northern Hemisphere teams get to play softer opposition if you look at world ranking wise. So it's a tough school, no doubt about it. But it is the worst Springbok series of results we've seen since 2006. But in 2007, we won the World Cup. So even if Jake White had a completely dogshit year, it was still so much better. This is the worst Springbok team we've ever seen. Now, we need to actually let that sink in for a bit. The worst Springbok team we've ever seen. Now, obviously, rugby prior to 1991 didn't really matter because, let's be honest, we were all very young. So that's the first thing. Just keep it at that without getting political. So rugby before it didn't exist. Nothing since then has been as bad as right now. That absolute pile of shite that was on the pitch. And I'm not talking, okay, the pitch was also pretty bad this weekend. There were so many things that were bad. The referee wasn't good. But every aspect of that game was just absolutely embarrassing. And you've got to think that Adrian Strauss, who's giving his level best, I'm sure, he's just not the guy. And the fact that they keep assisting with him because he's going to retire, that's emotion. That's unprofessional. It's amateurish to say this guy's going to play the rest of the season. If he's being crap as a leader, he has to stop being a leader. You don't go, oh, well, you know, he's a Gemini and then it's his birthday and then, you know, his wife really wants him to play. What other crap excuses have you got here? He's blonde. He's very polite. He's nice. He's a Christian. Like, stop it right now. The whole match, the Italians were very, very much floating with the offside line, okay? Not once did Adrian Strauss stop the game and go, ref, I'm sorry, but it's just ridiculous. Could you please watch the offside line? At least show the presence that you're aware of the game situation rather than just cucking yourself, because every single one of those Bok players looked like they were just on the verge of just soiling themselves. And a better captain like John Smith, a better captain along the lines of, who knows, pick anyone in the past would have had more of an understanding about what's going on in the game. The big problem, and Eddie Jones made this very clear last week, is that when he picks a team, he's not too worried about this and that and players' specialties and all that kind of stuff. He knows that from 1 to 15, he has players that can adapt to any game plan. What do our guys do on the weekend? The Bok were just trying not to lose. That's not adapting to a game plan. That is damage control. Adrian Strauss had no idea how to adapt to those conditions. They were heavy on the foot. The scrums weren't going well. The Italians were just all over them because that's what the underdogs do. They scrap like dogs, and that's what they do. And that is to be expected. I don't even play professional rugby. I sit on the couch with a beer, and I watch this, and I know this. And at no stage did Adrian Strauss go, okay, guys, look, hang on a second. This game's not going to be pretty from here on in. We need to boss these guys that break down. We need to get bloody physical. And then we need to look for gaps and just play territorial. Didn't happen because nobody can adapt. Now, if no one can adapt, forget the amateur structures. Forget political interference. Forget all the other crap. If we don't have rugby players who can think on the field right now, international rugby is not for them. Nos Burgess says much over the weekend in an interview he did with Mark Lewis from EWN. Basically, no one's adapting because no one can think. And if they can't deal with the pressure, let's just isolate this little problem right here. And as I said, I know there's bigger problems in SA rugby, but that is just so plain and horribly easy to see. It really is. But enough about me ranting. You know, it's always good just to get a little bit of Nick Mallett, just a little perspective. But what I want you to take out of this is how absolutely, ultimately deflated Nick Mallett sounds when asked about this. I mean, this cracks me up as well. This is Nick Mallett, his thoughts after the game on SuperSport.
Yeah, again, you know, I'm just very...
I mean, how's that for an intro? This guy's normally breathing fire.
I don't know what to say.
He's normally breathing fire, and here he's going...
Similarly to after the disappointment of losing to Japan, it's unfortunately a similar state that I never expected South African rugby to be in. I never, ever thought that this proud...
And he is a realist of note. Nick knows. Nick's seen the cracks. He's talked about this a long time. He even couldn't fathom the idea. And he's coached Italy, of course, so he knows Italian rugby very, very, very well. He could not fathom what happened over the weekend.
Nation of fantastic rugby players and players that won a World Cup in 2007, beat the All Blacks in 2009 3 out of 3 times, have had probably 7, 8, 9 players who would have been in a World 15, around 207 to 209. And, you know, we've got ourselves into a position where we can't, you know, we haven't beaten Japan and we're losing to Italy and don't look anywhere near capable of beating Australia. Well, Australia at home we beat, but New Zealand and England on our performances recently. 13 tries we conceded, 9 against New Zealand, 4 against England. Today, you know, 2, but very nearly another one, I think, at the end. So I was sitting there thinking, it's so easy to blame the coach and it's so easy to blame, you know, because that's always the person you turn to. But there are the structures that in South African rugby have you know, not worked in favour of keeping our players in this country.
Also, making sure that you know when he starts repeating himself, like he's out, he's done. Like all that South Africa's right now, Nick Mallett is done. He's finished with actually having to talk about this. He's sitting there right now because he's contracted to do so, and he's going, oh crap, I've got to talk another 10 minutes about Springboks. He is so done, and Nick Mallett loves talking. If there was an Olympic goal for talking, this guy would be the Usain Bolt. So just take, so if you feel like you've run out of things to say about the box, don't worry. Nick Mallett has too. that now leaves, okay, after the Italian loss, that now leaves Canada, Fiji, Georgia, Namibia, Romania, Samoa, Spain, Tonga, United States, and Uruguay. Those are the only teams left that the box have not lost to.
I agree with Nick Mallett. There needs to be a change. There needs to be change. I think it's sad to see, like, Italy, I mean, the Springboks going down to Italy. As I said, I wouldn't be watching any Bok games, and I heard about this Saturday evening that the boys went down by 2 points. I think I should start joining this all betting against the Springboks and everything. But, yeah, I think there's something, on a serious note, something needs to be done, not only just blaming the coach, but from the grassroots, are the guys from Varsity Cup, Curry Cup, Super Rugby being given the equal opportunities that they deserve, because a lot of players are in the Springbok setup not because of merit but because of what they've done or achievements that they have achieved in the past, which is not working out for us. So I think we really need to dig deep and take a second look at how we prepare for, well, going forward for the next World Cup.
Well, okay, I just think we should just cut through the cuck and basically say that if our guys can't deal with pressure, and that's exactly what Saturday was. It was a dealing of pressure situation. Let's not go too deep in what we analyze and think about this team right now. They've got Wales over the weekend. All these guys play Super Rugby. They're all professionals. They all make lots and lots of money. If they can't, Alistair says that he hasn't lost the change room. So what does he actually have? This is what I'm saying. It's like, what does he actually have? SuperSport had a really good article. I forget who it was written by, but he basically said, what is Alistair Garcia apologizing for? What are the Springboks apologizing for as far as that press release? Are they apologizing for the fact that Garcia should not be here right now because he's just out of his depth? Is he apologizing for the fact that team selections have gone terribly and all the faith he's shown in senior players has not rewarded him? Or is he apologizing for the fact that these guys clearly just aren't understanding what modern-day rugby is? So they need to kind of specify what's going on here. Or they're apologizing for the fact that they just don't care enough. I mean, who really knows? Because no one can be this bad. You simply can't. With the structures of SA schoolboy rugby through to Craven Week, through to all the other structures here, as bad as they are, flawed in places, we must have at least 45 guys any given Sunday that can walk onto that field. Even just a turn-up team, you're given a jersey, you go, right, guys, we're going to play Italy. You'd be like, can you win? Yeah, sure, I'll win. That's what's going to happen. And those players, it was just limp, and it was terrible. And all I'm saying on that, because we have to go to cricket and we have to chat to Dennis. Ah, sheepers. Okay, well, I feel slightly better from getting around that. Dennis, you're not much of a rugby fan, are you?
Not really. It's not really a native sport down here in the southeast of Australia, but it's good to see the Springboks getting beaten in something, you know?
No, the Springboks get beaten in everything. We've got to say, Springboks and Proteas are very different things. It is
I was
sad.
Listening to that interview. I forgot the fact that you guys lost to Japan in the World Cup. That's one of my greatest sporting highlights for a long time. I forgot all about that.
Well, it's a big moment because beaten by a Japan team coached by an Aussie who used to coach for the Springboks in 2000. See, this is why you got to watch more rugby, Dennis. Anyway, while I simmer down.
Yeah, I should.
Well, I simmer down just a bit because, I mean, I'm pretty tired of this. I mean, I love cricket and I love golf, but rugby is also a big part of who I am. So while I simmer down, I want to play Hashim Amla, just basically addressing this whole ball tampering thing, and then we'll get back to you after that. Here we go. Here's Hashim with the entire team behind him being addressed by your media.
Good afternoon, everybody. As you can see, we have the full team behind us here. the reason everybody is here is to stand together, really, and show solidarity to what has been something that was really, what we thought was actually a joke. It's not April, but the allegations against Fuff was really a farce, really ridiculous thing. And as a team, we're standing strong. We've done nothing. I mean, it's fast. It's basically a joke. So our boys are here. We're standing strong. And
It's being investigated though by the ICC.
Is it?
It's absolutely being investigated.
Well, whether it is or not, we've done nothing wrong. So and I know Fuff has done absolutely nothing wrong. And for us, it's really, I mean, I chew bubblegum while I'm building. So yeah. Do you want me to brush my teeth after lunch every time I come out to
But this doesn't look like bubblegum. It looks like a minty with respect to Faf, I'm open to whatever suggestion it was, but it looks like some type of lolly that he's sort of, and he's smiling as he does it. So the footage is a bit weird.
Maybe it was a tasty sweet. I mean, I have had sweets well. And I said, do you want me to brush my teeth after lunch? After tea?
Yeah.
And also, we've got to be pretty logical about this. Common sense surely has got to prevail. That if I've got something in my mouth, guys are handing out these froggies, the red froggies, at lunchtime or during the game to give the kids out in the crowd to keep them hydrated, to keep them energized, and we're standing in the field for 2 hours and you don't want us to have some bull tongue in my pocket, some nuts or something. Guys, there was no malicious intent whatsoever.
But are you aware, Hashim, that England have admitted to using the tactic in 2005? I think Mike Atherton was involved.
Is that a tactic? I don't know. I'm not aware of it. I mean, I can't keep repeating.
They believe it enhanced the swing of the ball. They believe it. Yeah, they believe it. It did enhance the swing on the ball.
Well, sorry, is it proven or what? Because that's something that's really new to us. It's something that we guys have just had.
When did Hashim Amla become such a media badass?
So I've had sweets in my mouth, bubblegum in my mouth, bull tongue, nuts. I'm not sure what the big deal is. For me, it's actually, to a lot of people, it's sounding like more like sour sweeps and other sour sweets for people in their heads, maybe that we've played really good cricket. And the timing of it is a bit weird too. That's basically
it. So who are you directing this at? Because the ICC is investigating. Mm. So who are you directing this at today?
I'm just trying to clear what we think is an absolutely wrongful allegation made on our captain.
Does the team feel it's been unfairly maligned in the past, in the recent past, for similar incidents to this? And is that part of the reason why you guys have, I guess, presented this very united front in fairly unusual circumstances this afternoon?
We are standing in solidarity to our captain, who has done absolutely nothing wrong.
Okay, I think you get the picture there. It's not gone. But, I mean, I didn't realize that Hashim Amla was the Protea pioneer of badass comments and media dismissals, huh? It's a new role for him.
Was that possibly the worst press conference ever? That's probably why he's no longer skipper of the test side. He waffled more than that rugby guy you just had on. and then he puts on, you know, I haven't heard, you know, well, he kept saying, we have done nothing wrong, I have done nothing wrong. Who is he, the Iraqi information minister? It's just going.
But I'm just amazed how dismissive he was. Like, of all the people in the team, they said, okay, Hash, you tell these guys to piss off, basically. You're the guy to go with this. Because after that, all the stuff that's been said in the past, no one's going to go against you.
But then, the best bit was how he brought all the little kids in the world into it by saying, well, you know, the little kids eat little red frogs on the ground. So how many straws is this bloke clutching at? Oh, it's just hilarious, Ben. And the fact that there's like 11 grown men or 10, because Faf wasn't there, standing out in the middle of a field, and then this leader gets up and goes, well, you know, it's all unfair. Don't pick on us. You know, it's just it's hilarious.
Well, look, I find that funny. I also find this funny. If you're going to address us, we've got to play us.
Adelaide Airport was the scene of some heavy-handed security, as a Proteus staff member went to extraordinary lengths to protect Captain Faf du Plessis. Du Plessis has been the subject of an investigation by the ICC after allegedly using a mint to change the condition of the ball. But as a Channel 9 journalist attempted to question the Proteus skipper, the security guard intervened.
So basically, Australia have
blocking the path of the journalist as the team exited the airport.
So what you guys have done now, you found like some 6'4" ranger who just come out of nowhere with a microphone to try and get in first base.
The press release from the South African media manager said, he came at him with an unknown object, which I thought was hilarious. But in my mind, I don't know, microphones to me are well known. But it was good to see the security guard actually, a South African guy actually lay a tackle for a change. It's been a while, Ben.
Well, okay, that's true, fair joke. But did you not find he's a bit small? I would have thought the Proteas would have had someone bigger. I mean, this guy didn't look too threatening. And he wasn't really committed to the total charge either. It was more a cursory body check. Okay, but like all this jokes aside, because... Like, I really do feel this is a terrible sideshow. Or is it? I mean, are you guys, is the media over there, general feeling over there that the FAF has done something actually wrong here? Or is it very much like a, well, we got a bit of dirt, let's scratch it?
Well, yeah, but it's not that the Aussies have laid the charge. It's the ICC that have laid the charge.
Yes, Dennis, and the Australian... We all know the ICC you, England, India.
Ben, the Australian... So my insider information tells me that the Australian management wanted nothing to do with it and wished it didn't actually happen. So the ICC have run with it. And when you look at the footage, the reality is he probably has broken the rules. You know, it's not for me or you to make the rules. They're there. And if you look at what he's done, he's probably broken them. And it's not as though this guy doesn't have form. You know, remember that Fuff once got fined and rubbed out for deciding to rub cricket balls on his zipper, which was a first. You know, so... The guy's a proven cheat, and he's having another go.
Proven cheats. All right. Well, look, I mean, that's what I want to get. I want to get the full word. So if Australian does...
He's like your version of Mohammed Amir.
Okay, no, that's pushing it. So if the Australian cricket board wants nothing to do with this, then obviously this is just tabloid journalism at its best. So basically what you're saying is, okay, it might not be the greatest act ever from FAF with not the best history, but let's just move on to cricket. Is that what you're saying? There's only more to really see or do here.
Look, the reality is you got the South African captain probably caught by the letter of the law cheating. Australia's down 2-0. We're imploding. And what else? Yeah, Australians are probably sick of reading, woe is me stories about their team and the papers. So this is something else. And, you know, like you always say, mate, bring back the hard bastard. And it's good to see, you know, the media get into the opposition for a change because we've got a reason to. It's a bit, it's a soft reason to do it, but we need something. We need a straw to clutch onto.
Is this not just Ashes prep? This is basically what it is, right?
Yeah, it's warm up. Exactly right. But we've got rid of our chairman of selectors now. And
A lot has happened since we last talked.
Yeah, it has. It's been really interesting. On my radio show, Ben, which you guys also have as a podcast on Cliff Central. Can I plug it like that?
Very, very much so.
I had a rant last week, and very good. I had a rant last week, and I said Rod Marsh has to go, and the next day he left. So we lost our chairman of selectors, and we have replaced him with Trevor Holmes, who was in charge of the side when we last won 16 in a row. So the guy does know how to pick a team. And then we also brought in Greg Chappell as interim selector. So now we've got Greg Chappell, Trevor Holmes, and Mark Waugh. So the youngest of them is 51 years of age, which is, screams of bringing Australia into the modern era. And but they've drawn a line in the sand, and they're trying to reset, and they've picked a new squad for the Adelaide Pink Ball Test, which I'll be at, and looking forward to that. And we'll see how that goes. But, there's some unlucky guys. Callum Ferguson was brought in for one test and dropped. 10 days ago he's in the form of his life. He has one test and now he's not. They've dropped Joe Menny, who I don't know if you followed over there in South Africa, but he was brought in to the test squad for the first test ahead of a guy called Jackson Bird, based on the fact that he bats better at number 11 than Bird. So it's the first time I've seen a strike bowler picked on their batting, but this is where Australian test selection got to under Rod Marsh. But we've got some new kids coming in. We've got a new guy called Renshaw, who's only 20 years of age, who'll open the batting. One of my mates is a medico in the Australian cricket fraternity and tells me he's a bit of a strange cat, this one. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. We've brought in Nick Maddison, who's a bit of a thrasher from New South Wales, to bat at number 6. And I think he's a bit more like Ben Duckett of England. I don't think he's going to last in Test cricket. He tends to hit the ball a bit too hard and a bit too early. But, we'll try this out. We've brought in Chad Sayers, who's the bowling partner of Joe Menny from South Australia. Now, he can swing the ball. I know I've talked up Joe Menny on this show before, and then he came out and, made none for 80 in that ODI. But Chad can bowl, but we'll see how that goes. And Jackson Bird's back in the squad. And Nathan Lyons held his spot probably a bit luckily. He hasn't been bowling that well. But And the other one is Matthew Wade coming as a keeper for Neville. And typical Australian selectors, he's been picked not on because he can bat or catch better, but because he's a bit more vocal. So, you know, we keep coming up with new means and ways to pick our players that have nothing to do with whether they can actually play the game, which
well,
I like.
Well, ultimately, consistency wins here. I think that's what we're really looking at. But look, just isolate one of those things there. One of those selections there. Neville, do you really think that he needed to go as far as... If, you know, there were some wholesale changes here. I mean, obviously Ferguson's unlucky. Him and his brother must be so upset right now. But Neville wasn't terrible. He looked alright in Perth. He was given a going over against Rabada, which I think any other batsman would have also succumbed to. That to me seemed like the harshest call.
Yeah, but if you think about it, Neville has probably been dragged down by Mitch Marsh. So Mitch Marsh was batting 6 and Neville 7. And when your number 6 can't deliver, there's a lot of pressure on your number 7. And he hasn't been going so well with the bat. He's averaging around 20 or something in Test cricket. Compare that with Matthew Wade, who's made 2 or 3 Test hundreds. And you know, the difference between the two is Matthew Wade will win your match now and then. Neville won't win you or lose your match. He's just kind of neutral and, you know, elevator music. Bit boring. So, you know, if Australia had been playing a proper number 6, I think Neville would still be there because the pressure would have been off him to keep making runs. But because of Mitch Marsh, he's dragged a few more down with him. So he's unlucky. Yeah, I do agree with that. But that's, again, how the cookie crumbles sometimes, right?
Yep, it's so true. So we go on to Adelaide. Anything else we can really expect here, or do you still see the Proteas just dominating with the ball and that's kind of going to be it?
Yeah, I think, look, next time we speak, I need you to get that soundbite of when we spoke before this series when I said South Africa will win 3-0, because I think that's what's going to happen. I know you guys are bowling so brilliantly. You know, Rabada's bowling in his first change. He's not even taken a new ball in the last test. It was Abbott and Philander. And it's just brilliant to watch. And I think the pink ball's going to play into their hands. You know, it moves a bit more and they're probably better bowling conditions under the lights. So I think Abbott and Philander are just going to be unplayable. And then if you've got Rabada steaming in, throwing down bullets at 140 kilometres an hour, it'll be great. And if the grass has got a little bit of the wicket's got a little bit of grass on it, like it did last year for the day-night test, it'll play into Rabada's hands as well. Be a bit more bounce. Having said that, you know, it is a bit of a batsman's paradise, Adelaide. And if these new kids sort of show a bit and dig in, we might be able to put some runs on the board. But Australia just can't make runs at the moment. Whereas, you know, South Africa can. If Hashim doesn't step up, Faf will. If Faf doesn't, then Bavuma steps up. If he doesn't, well, you know, Dean Algar, the pair, will step up. There's always someone around that's going to, you know, at least put a 50, 80, 100 on the board. And, you know, if Warner or Steve Smith don't make it for Australia, it doesn't exist. We're just too weak in the batting lineup. And that's why I tipped South Africa 3-0 before the series started. And I'm getting close to cashing in my ticket, Ben.
Very nice, Dennis. And you mentioned the batsman, not even mentioning the best batsman, which is Quinton de Kock. Now, when it comes to the pink ball, you obviously have a better understanding of what most people have because you've seen a test in your own country. Is it going to change much with, like, as far as what you would do in the toss, just assess it and look at the pitch, or is it very much a ball first / bash first? Is there any kind of difference with the pink ball?
Look, I don't know. I think it's too early to tell. There's been like 2 pink ball tests or something in Australia, or 3 in the world or something. I think we're still learning what it all means. If you think back to last year's pink ball test when Australia played New Zealand, the ball moved around a bit, but, you know, Bolt and Stark weren't swinging it any more than what they probably normally do. I think it probably comes down to how your batsmen feel and when your batsmen would prefer to bat. I'm not sure that chasing the pink ball under lights is... necessarily, you know, imagine facing Rabada under lights with the pink ball is probably not something necessarily I'd like to do. Probably more daylight hours, so that might have something to do with it. But apart from that, I still think we're learning what it all means. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the toss.
Yeah, oh well. So that's going to be Adelaide from Wednesday, I think it is. But now, other more pressing news that's kind of happening right now is that England have just, they've collapsed again. You just say it's England is England old, or is it just India's pitchers finally coming into the series after they kind of bluffed everyone to thinking it's going to be free and fair by having a 5-day test in the first game?
Look, if you look at the first pitch that was put up for the first test where India had to hold on for the draw, it was really a bit of a road. It was a South Africa or a whacker type pitch, you know. It didn't give much to India's spin bowlers, but this latest pitch has let Ashwin and Jadeja come back into the game. And the reality is not many teams outside of the subcontinental teams can play good subcontinental cricket when you've got those type of pitches. Although I was quite impressed. I mean, Cook's second innings, he lasted for a long time until he went out in the last over before stumps on day four. And they found one with... what's his name? Hamid.
Hamid, yeah, let's go.
Again, another 19-year-old. Yeah, another 19-year-old kid. And, geez, I wish more teams would play these kids. As soon as you see that they're good, just give them a run and give them 5 years and watch them blossom, because that's the way we're going to get people back watching Test cricket. But, you know, it's not easy to win in India, mate. And England are probably now going to lose the series 3-0 or something. England will probably lose the series 3-0 or something. But who would have picked England to win it beforehand? Not many.
No. Well, they've had a decent run there in recent years. I mean, Root's done well there with the bat, so has Cook. But it's just, I think now with India having that spin axis of Jadeja and Ashwin, and these pitchers do anything whatsoever, then they're going to be so impossible to play. Pakistan, New Zealand, anything to re-look into that series? Or is it just going to be, you know, the seamers are going to get through for New Zealand?
Yeah, look, it's interesting, that one too. That one didn't last too long. And again, Pakistan's still number two in the world, right? And I don't know if you saw that pitch in New Zealand, but it was like one of your greens at your golf courses, Ben. Yeah. It was so green. And the ball, you know, it was good to see pitches where the ball's on top of the bat, and it was seaming and it was swinging. And, you know, someone like Yunus Khan, who is an absolute legend of the game, had his lowest aggregate run score ever in a test match. He made one run in both innings. And when guys like him and Misbah are struggling, and these are guys that have been around and seen everything, you know, it's hard to play. And you know, New Zealand's got a decent bowling attack. You know, Bolton Southee are world class. We forget about Neil Wagner, who became the second fastest Kiwi to 100 test wickets.
Well, we don't forget about him because he's from here.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, he did it in 26 matches, and the only guy to beat him is Richard Hadlee. He did it in 25. So if you're competing with Richard Hadlee and how quick you're taking wickets, you're probably going all right. I'm not sure what to make of it. I'll be interested to see how the second test goes, because Pakistan are then coming to Australia for a three-test series, and the pitches won't be as green as they are in New Zealand. But it's just so good to see the differences in wickets. When maybe 12 months ago, Ben, when you and I were speaking, we were down in the dumps about how boring Test cricket was getting because all the pitches were the same. And now we're seeing these differences again. I just reckon it's great for the game. And Pakistan will have to dig deep. They didn't lose by much, right? I mean, they lost. They probably lost by, you know, essentially two or three decent hits from batsmen, but they could turn it around if they've got some good swing bowlers, and they've definitely got a great spinner in Yasir Shah. So if they can find some form in the second test, New Zealand aren't the greatest batting lineup behind sort of Williamson. You know, Ross Taylor's well out of form. They're probably struggling apart from those two to really get some good guys. Latham, though, popped up in the last 12 months.
Yeah, and then they got this.
It's an interesting series to watch.
Well, especially with this de Gronholm, who looks like an 80s porn star, but he's running through those guys, and he can bat a bit.
Yeah, he's Zimbabwean, so another one from your continent. It makes me think, what happens if we, makes me think, what if we grabbed all the best Zimbabweans from the last 10 years and made a test team, what it would look like? Because I reckon it would go okay. It's just a shame that country can't get itself in the gear. But yeah, go on.
Well, it's true. I mean, like most failing businesses, some, like Australia should maybe just liquidate Zimbabwe, take the rest of the talent that's left there. you can have Guy Antini as a psychological coach on the side, and I reckon you can use the resources.
Oh, you could. I mean, Brendan Taylor ran off after the World Cup to England, and he was averaging 50. You've got De Gronholm, as you said. There's Elliot, who played in the World Cup final only a couple of years ago. There's Gary Balance in England. There's quite a few Zimbabweans running around playing, in national teams. Anyhow, at least they're getting a run.
They are indeed. Dennis, we've come to the end of our little chat. I need to talk about golf. I need to plug that advert I'm in and talk about European tour and stuff like that.
I did see that TV ad you're in with your nice white pants, Ben. That's something you need to look at, mate.
You
are a man, right?
I'm taking no fashion advice from Australians. That's where I draw the line in life. Okay, Dennis. But what else is going? What else is going on your site and your show and all that kind of stuff?
I'll plug the Can't Bowl, Can't Throw Cricket Show. We are live on Australian digital radio every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. my time, which I think is about 11 a.m. in South Africa. But If you're not on the website to hear that, just go to the Cliff Central podcast page, and you guys are kindly running the show about a day behind when we record it. And we do talk a lot about South African cricket, so if you enjoy a laugh, tune into that.
Yeah, it's a really good show. It's up there with like my favorite podcast, and I listen to a variety of things, Dennis. I'm not just saying it because you've made time for me today. It's a really, really good show.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Otherwise, catch Dennis on Twitter. I can never keep up with what you are, but your actual handle never changes. You're at Dennis Friedman _, right?
Dennis Cricket _. Cricket _. A bit close enough.
Okay, there we go. Dennis Cricket _. That's Dennis. Dennis, thanks a lot. We'll, I'll try to find that clip we used to talk about, that 3-0 drubbing. And let's just hope that all these sideshows will now come to an end and we can just play cricket and get back to the Proteas winning.
Sideshows are great. See you, mate.
All right, man. Thanks for your time. That was Dennis Friedman. Is always going to be our number one cricket guy. There really is no one else. If you think there's someone better than Dennis, well, feel free. I know we've had some great guests on the show, but Dennis is the absolute business. We've got to finish off with some golf. Lots going on right now. This week is basically the start of the Sunshine Tour for the summer season here in South Africa. A very incredibly interesting season. But before we get into that, there was this really great interview going around last week. There's this little kid on the European Tour. And he interviews players, and he asks really tough questions, and he's really funny. He's all of, I don't know, like 8 years old, but the kid is phenomenally sharp. So they did this interview with Rory McIlroy in Dubai, because last week was the DP World Tour Finals. And there was a whole bunch of awkward questions that he asked, anything from Zika right through to skipping his wedding. So here's Billy interviewing Rory McIlroy. This and all the other clips that I played today will be on the Bounce. I'll see it on Saturday after the show. But I'm just going to play a little bit of this with Rory getting grilled by an 8-year-old.
I know Andy Murray's a good mate of yours, but who's your favourite girl tennis player?
Favourite girl tennis player.
Now, if you don't know why there's such a massive pause here, why it's awkward, of course, because Rory was engaged to Caroline Wozniacki, who at the time was one of the big tennis players in women's tennis. He then sort of, the wedding invites went out, and then Rory was like, actually, I'm not so keen, calls it all off. So that's why there's all this awkwardness.
Honestly, Billy, I've stopped following women's tennis the last couple of years.
Maybe you could call.
Yeah, I think so.
I heard the world will end if you never get a green jacket. Is that true?
Well, if you read some of the stuff that was in papers and if you believed it, you would think that the world would end if I didn't get a green jacket. The world won't end if I don't get a green jacket. I would love a green jacket, but hopefully one day it'll happen. I've still got plenty more years and a lot of time left to try and get one.
If you don't get one, I'll buy you one down the shop.
Oh, you will?
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
So, everyone wants to know the real reason why you nearly missed your Ryder Cup tea time.
I wish it was a better story than it was. The TV was showing the tea times and they were in Eastern time and we were in Central time.
Okay, so look, it's quite a long interview. I'm going to cut to the chase, just on the back of that tennis thing. Right at the end, Billy gives Rory McIlroy a little gift.
Let Trump wait a little bit. Let him sweat it out.
For Christmas, I want to get the same golf clubs as you have next year. What shall I be asking for?
I don't know. Santa will know.
This is so clever because Rory doesn't know which golf clubs he's using now that Nike aren't manufacturing it. So they're getting a small kid to basically ask all these really, really tough questions.
Santa, what I'm going to play with next year, and you can ask him.
Yeah, okay. You're getting married. I've got you a wedding present, but you should probably open it now.
Thanks, Billy. I think. Box of socks. What's all this about?
Just in case you get cold feet again.
That is so good. That's so cheeky. Wow, that kid's going to have such a future in the media. If you go into the European Tour YouTube account, you'll see Billy interviewing all kinds of other people. The European Tour online is really great. If you love golf, There is so much on there. The Instagram account is amazing. Same on Twitter. They're just all over the place. They just know exactly what to do. Know the audience so well. Finally, on the golf, though. So, like I said, the Sunshine Tour basically starts this week. Here's my little list here. So, it's a real big deal because we've got the SA Open with Rory McIlroy. He will be coming to SA to play in the SA Open on the 12th to the 15th of Jan. The SA Open, of course, is the second oldest pro tournament in the world. You'll hear that all the time when it gets announced in the intro after this.
As you might recall, last year, Ernie said in his pre-tournament press conference that he was going to get me to come and play in the 2017 BMW South African Open. Well, he wasn't wrong.
Great news for us, for South African golf fans and fans around the world. We have committed ourselves to growing the South African Open. You know, we promised that Rory would come.
And we have a shining star at sunset.
So that's it. That's probably the biggest name in golf for me because I think Rory McIlroy is the greatest golfer. I know he didn't win over the weekend, but the guy's just incredible. The Americans will blow hot and cold, but Rory is such an absolute superstar. And it's a really, really big thing for the 2017 SA Open. So to go through just quickly before we finish the show today, just what you need to look forward to. If you love golf or you're curious about golf, you got to go watch these guys. It's really great. It's one of the few sports you can actually get so close to professionals. When you go watch cricket or rugby or whatever, you're not really that close. You always watch them afar. Here, you can like stand next to the guys on the tee and you can just see exactly what goes into golf. And when you see these guys hit it, it is something absolutely incredible. So this week, Lion of Africa Cape Town Open will be taking place at Royal Cape. December the 1st to the 4th, Alfred Dunhill Championship at Leopard Creek. Most of the European Tour players say this is the greatest golf course they play the entire year, from conditioning to obviously location. They're right there on the Crocodile River in the Kruger National Park. It is amazing. January 12th to 15th will be the SA Open at Glendower. I know Glendower has been hit by the floods recently up here in Joburg, but it will be go time once it gets to 12th of January. No worry about that. Ive Africa PGA Championship will take place February 9th to 12th. That's also up here in the Gauteng. Dimension Data Pro-Am at Fancourt, February 16th to 19th. Then the Joburg Open up here in Gauteng, played at Royal Johannesburg. That'll be February 23rd to 26th. And then March 2nd to 5th will be the Swane Open. Trying to open that will be in Pretoria Country Club. So there's so much local golf to get to. And if you didn't see any of this, well, on Supersport Now, between now and forever, you're going to see an ad for the Sunshine Tour. It sounds like this.
What have you been searching for?
Emotive stuff, right?
The perfect stroke. The perfect carry. A perfect moment. That drive where everything comes together.
Yeah.
Soars over the fairway. It's about that moment in time where all those hours pay off.
Really top class. And you could not play it much better than that.
That moment that will forever etch your name in history. Begins here. Alfred Dunhill Championship.
So if you're watching that ad, yes, the golfer is me. I'm on this ad. You're going to see me in orange and white the whole summer, so get used to it. And yeah, if you want to see what from behind the scenes from the advert, go on to the bounceofsea.za right now and I'll tell you all about it. There's some pictures of me, and it was quite a long, tedious day, and then I was tying a shoelace for about 3 hours. I was trying to put a glove on without making it look too handsy. Wow, this is quite something. I admire anybody who's ever been in an advert in a starring role. And then I just stare at a camera so you see my face a lot. It's pretty funny, actually. I mean, I'm looking at it now. It looks pretty cool because someone's edited it brilliantly. But when I went to go swing the club, I was hitting it like shit. The ball was going all over the place. But hey, it made a nice ad. And that's the Sunshine Tour for the summer. That is the Bounce Show for this week from me and AK over here. AK, thanks for coming through again with your morning wrap-up. And next week, well, let's just say we're going to be wrapping up the Proteas. Obviously, they're beating Australia again this week, no doubt about that. We're wrapping up the Bucks, who will be losing to Wales this week. Also, kind of a little doubt about that, despite the fact that Wales aren't very good right now. If there's anything else you want me to cover, I'm sorry I didn't get to Twitter messages today. We're just with guests and all that kind of stuff. I do appreciate the messages, but I'll get to it next week. If there's anything else that you want for the rest of the show, for the rest of the year, ben@thebalance.co.za. If any other topics you want me to bring up, any other guests you want me to try and get before the end of year, I'll be doing a whole bunch of year in review things starting from basically next week onwards. I think there's three more shows for this year. And then at the end of that, I've got a big announcement to make. The Balance Show will be changing completely as of second week of January. So stay with me for that. Go to thebalance.co.za today for more about the sport from my side. The Bounce Show will be on there with all the clips and all everything else. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at followthebounce. AK, where can we find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me at AK Urinal Sport SA for now then, yeah.
Okay, so that's AKURINAL.
Sport SA.
There's AK. He's new to social media. He's new to Twitter, so give him a follow. And chat to him. He's just like me. He wants to talk about sports, got lots of opinions. So that's it. That's the Bounce Show this week. Get back to cliffcentral.com for usual programming. And just like Dennis said, his cricket show is on here as well. Cliffcentral.com. Have a look around. You will enjoy it. Catch you back next week. Thanks for your time. Cliffcentral.com.